Hello, bad movie lovers. I'm Nick Scheist,
the master of the stupid stuff,
and host of Bad Movies We Love, the podcast where we take a lovingly critical look at movies that may have fallen short of expectations, but left an indelible impact on our hearts. Every week, we dive into a different maligned movie. From mega flops to cult classics to B-movies to forgotten disasters, we laugh, we love, we ponder, and maybe, just maybe, we feel things. Along the way, we drop behind-the-scenes trivia, spin our bonus wheel of hypotheticals, compose heartfelt haikus, we face the reality of Critics Corner, and prescribe the perfect gateway drug movies to expand your bad movie horizons. So if you've ever said, "This movie sucks, but I love it anyway," you're in the right place.
If you're listening to this, you are the resistance.
Look for Bad Movies We Love wherever you get your podcasts and join us for the journey. Because sometimes the best movies are the worst ones. Oh, hello there. You are now listening to Cunked, a transatlantic production of the Scheist Podcast Network. Welcome to Cunked, a very unofficial podcast, hosted by Nick Scheist and Skadoosh. So join us as we celebrate the life and work of Philomena Kunk. This is a special presentation of our interview with Dr. Prokar Dasgupta.
Welcome back to Kunked, a very unofficial podcast, where we blend the sharp wit with curious insight and invite you to think and occasionally laugh. Today I'm immensely honoured to welcome a guest who embodies the best of both worlds. Professor Prokar Dasgupta, OBE, is not only a world-leading surgeon and clinical scientist at King's College London, but also the pioneering chair in robotic surgery and urological innovation, and the mind behind the so-called Dasgupta technique. With a career spanning over three decades, he's played a pivotal role in robotic surgery, cancer immunology, editorial leadership in academic journals, and global surgical training, earning him honours like the Padma Shri from India, the St. Peter's Medal, and an OBE for services to surgery and science. But there's more. He's also survived an encounter with Philomena Kunk, the haplessly brilliant alter ego of Diane Morgan, in the BBC special Kunk in Kunk on Life, and that's very much why we're here today as well. So in one unforgettable moment, Diane Morgan, or Philomena Kunk, confidently asserted to Professor Dasgupta that only 40% of people have skeletons and that knees are a con. And whilst most experts crack, Professor Dasgupta remained steadfast, maintaining under composure that Kunk herself burst out laughing, a reaction that, so I believe you later revealed, had never happened before. And I'm very, very keen to talk to you about that. But also I wanted to include this from The Guardian, as they aptly put it, that Professor Dasgupta's bafflement was either a beautiful naïf, or he is simply the greatest actor since Laurence Olivier. Either way. So today, you're not just meeting a surgeon and innovator, you're meeting the man who can walk through absurdity with surgical precision. Professor Dasgupta, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here, Mike. What a great day. And let's have some fun.
Let's have some fun indeed. So I'll kick straight off because we mentioned that. Obviously, let's start with your encounter with Philomena Kunk. You've already survived one Philomena Kunk interview, which is basically like being operated on without anaesthetic. Looking back, what was going through your head at the moment when she began asking you questions?
I was told that she is hapless, and I had in fact prepared for this haplessness by watching her videos. And as you know, these are now easily available on YouTube. And my own personal favorite is her interview with Robert Peston of ITV, the political correspondent. And if you haven't seen it, it's absolutely worth a watch because he just can't control himself. This is a very
seasoned political journalist, isn't it?
Correct. And
this is the thing, is that almost because, again, a lot of the people that she does interview are such leaders in their field and probably have come across so many different ridiculous questions and such, but there is something about her in particular. It's a lot of fun to watch people, like you say, like Robert Peston. I believe, was it something like, what was the most political moment in British history?
Exactly. I mean, he just went like this. I mean, and, you know, he is very expressive. So half the time he goes like this, then, you know, the spectacles go on the forehead. I mean, it was embarrassing. I mean, she absolutely murdered him on during that interview. And this is a man who, as you say, is seasoned, has the best and the worst in politics, British and international, on his show, and asked them difficult questions, and he just couldn't control himself. So,
and this is an individual as well who is used to watching, and again, seasoned, trained professionals in politicians and media types, people and PR and comms. He is used to people, and it's usually himself who is delivering the questions to them, which put them off kilter. And so it's kind of nice to see it put back the other way, and also kind of good to see him stumble so much over something. I believe Philomena says, a such and such event. Would you say it was incredibly significant or incredibly important?
Indeed.
And then she, anytime he says significant, she says, so not important. And then vice versa. Just a little bit of
he just dies himself in knots. It's like saying, I mean, we keep saying to people during an examination, you know, I have examined thousands and thousands of students and taught them, and I keep saying to them, look, exam is not just knowledge. It's also a technique. Whatever you do, do not dig your own hole. And he just sits there and does exactly like, this is like a mistake that a child would make, and yet he makes it on national television. So, hey, what can I say?
Fabulous. So what you were saying is you went in there fully aware.
People have asked me, did I know the questions beforehand? I absolutely did not. What happens is at the studio, and this is not what the final product is, there is a iPad behind me, and she, while looking at me, is actually looking at her questions. So she has, she knows what she's asking. And she knows how silly she can get, exactly as an actress of her caliber would. I, or the expert sitting opposite, has no idea what she's going to ask. So the responses are completely impromptu and not made up. And I have said this many times, I didn't know what she was going to ask. And my thoughts were as seen on television. And some of the questions she asked were just unbelievably silly. And I had to put her right. Just I would put right someone who is asking silly questions.
In terms of silly questions, I mean, you've obviously been working in the medical field and in teaching for decades now. Has anyone asked you anything? Have you ever had an experience like that in, I was about to say, in real life? But...
thankfully not, although some students, particularly the younger students in medical school, when a complex piece of science is being discussed, and I always try to make science simple. In fact, we run within King's something called the surgical grand rounds, and we have a Bulkley Barry Cooper professorship. And I always tell these professors when they come and meet the students, that please keep it simple, make science simple, because otherwise it's not accessible. But even then, some students will say, Professor, I'm terribly sorry to ask a stupid question. But usually when they ask the question, it's not at all stupid. Often it's very insightful and something that I haven't thought about because it's so simple. With Kunk, that was not the case. I mean, what can I say? I mean, imagine... she said to me, which is in the outtakes, did you know that the eyes are connected to the anus? and 25 million views on Instagram.
Wow. Wow. So,
you introduced me with various accolades. I keep saying to myself, and, you know, I say to the public, so what? You know, none of what I have done has ever been seen 25 million times, but yet that question about the anus and the eye has been. And in fact, I believe it's one of the most views Kunk snippets
yes.
ever to be viewed. And in fact, her cue was, I suspect, on that iPad at the back saying, no, yes, it is. And I'm correcting her saying, no, this is nonsense. And she started winking at me. And, you know, so, and then, she said, you know, when you scratch your bum, you start winking. And she started winking. And I thought she's gone completely and utterly potty. I really thought she had gone completely mad. And it is, so I gave her a stern look because I genuinely thought she had lost it. And that's when she cracked. I mean, she just couldn't believe it. But what can I say?
What can you say? Do you get do you often get comments? Obviously, since you appeared on Kunk on Life, do colleagues talk to you about it? Do students? Do you get? So, is it more of a was it a career hazard or a more of a badge of honor?
Curious you say that because. You know, whenever the request like this comes, and, you know, it came through the BBC, it was absolutely do not talk to anyone about it, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I had to seek permission from our communications department because you do not just hide it from everyone and say, you know, I'll do it.
I'm going on national television. Trust me.
Correct. For a Christmas special and then many million views on Netflix 2 days later. So I took permission and our head of communications said to me, look, this could either really do this for visibility or it could sink you. People might just think he's not a serious surgeon. He's an idiot. I said, look, I've been around for 3 decades. I think this is going to show that I am human. I have a humorous side to me, and I'm not worried about any downturn that it can have on my career. I mean, I'm established, and if I'm not, I think it's too late, and why not have some fun? So I went into it knowing fully that this could potentially have an adverse effect, but on the other hand, it's been very positive. You know, I've had this IMDb post, which actors have. I think I haven't set it up. Someone else has. It has happened automatically. I was hoping I would get some offers from Bollywood, maybe Hollywood, but that hasn't happened yet.
You know, SRK is going to be emailing you. Oh, I think I've lost your mic. I'm so sorry. I can't. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, there we are. Sorry, it just cut out for a second. Sorry, what were you saying?
I was saying that this IMDb page has been set up, as you have probably seen. You know, I wasn't expecting that. I mean, it would have been nice to have had on top of the page, which I didn't set up, someone else did. I think this happens for actors, that I would get some offers from perhaps Hollywood or Bollywood. That hasn't happened, but the next best thing is an offer to join this podcast. I mean, what can I say?
Oh.
It must be a good thing.
Oh, listen, I mean, to be compared to Bollywood, I wasn't ready for that, Professor. Wasn't ready for that. So just on comedy in general, comedy and surgery seem miles apart. One of them aims to stitch people up, the other to stitch people back together. Do you see any overlaps in terms of the surgery and or the medical community and comedy itself?
You know, there are parallels, and the parallels, Mike, are good ones, I think. Surgeons are generally type A personalities, highly strung. They have to be, because they are literally at the cutting edge, life in our hands, in high stakes, really. You make a mistake, you can cause significant harm to the person who you are trying to cure, and they have put their full faith in you. So I think it is important for surgeons to have a sense of humor, because if you are too stressed and too hyperactive, as some folks are, then you sort of lose touch with reality when the stress really happens. So to have that sort of chill factor in you, I think, is vital. And particularly with stories about burnout among surgeons, some specialties have more burnout, long hours. I think it's vital to have some humor around you and just, say that what is the worst that could happen? And most importantly, be able to laugh at yourself.
I was reading about when Ronald Reagan was shot, when the president was shot, and he was rushed to hospital, and they just discovered the wound, the bullet wound, kind of under his ribs. And as they were cutting his clothes off of him, there were, I think, four surgeons over the top of him. And just before he was going under the anesthetic and just passed out, he said, "I hope you're all Republicans." And the doctors all replied, today, Mr. President, we are all Republicans." In fact, they were actually all Democrats. But yeah. So what you're saying there, laughter and comedy in itself, because by its very nature, I think it does attract a label of frivolity and but as anyone who's ever been through any stressful time in their life, no matter whether it's as yourself as a surgeon in a high stakes scenario, or having lost someone, or if you're depressed, laughter is much more than a well constructed joke. The feelings that it can invoke, and I guess from a medical perspective, maybe perhaps you can the stress levels in terms of the brain and things like that.
Yes, and laughter is the best medicine, and that's not just a statement. There are laughing clubs. I remember my late father used to go to morning exercise, and he would join a group of friends, and they had a laughing club where they would just laugh for 5 or 10 minutes as part of their early morning routine. And clearly leads, one, for the brain to chill, to release of various chemicals which can reduce stress. And, these are all pathways within the brain that you can influence. The flight or fright response is well known. It's been well known to doctors and surgeons for a very long time. So anything that can reduce it, and laughter is particularly good at it, is beneficial for us in high stakes, highly responsible jobs.
And comedy, you yourself, you've worked and lived across several different countries. Have you known comedy perhaps like medicine has its own perhaps regional accents?
Yes.
And kind of what is it you would say? Would you say, actually? I think the assumption is that this is very much a British type of humour, Philomena Kunk style. What would you say kind of makes it uniquely British in that sense?
Look, the first thing is Kunk herself. this time after Kunk on Earth, she did a number of shows on, American TV, because she's through Netflix. She is a huge hit in the United States. At one point, she says she would love to interview the president if she could. Oh,
and Elon Musk. Elon Musk.
Yes, indeed. And our friends across the pond seem to love the Britishness of her. But, you know, if you look at earlier interviews where the thought process was perhaps she should have a posh accent, and I believe she can do a posh accent very well, but she's from up north, and, you know, she hams up her Bolton accent. So, you know, it is, so starting with her appearance, with her tongue in cheek and her accent, I think it's all Britishness at its best. And that's why I think people love it. It's very genuine. I mean, it's silly, but it's very genuine.
In terms of audience responses, just because I've been sharing clips of Philomena Kunk for almost about 9 months now, and I have the analytics, I have the stats, and I can see which countries are engaging with the content, and it tends to be the same. It's American predominantly, perhaps about two thirds, and then a little less than a third, perhaps British, and then it's usually the same ones. It goes Germany, Canada, India, Australia, they are always there, and they kind of move a little bit. But I've spoken to some Indian people about what it is they love about the comedy, and I've spoken to Germans, and it's very different aspects. Can I ask you from an Indian perspective, what it is do you think that kind of speaks to the Indian people about her style of comedy?
I mean, Indians identify with British comedy perhaps more than they do with American comedy. And, you know, one of the reasons is series like even the black and white versions of it, Yes Minister.
Yes.
I saw Yes Minister when I was a child, and I found it hilarious. I mean, the Indians love people who can laugh at themselves, and Brits are the best in the world at doing that. Indian comedy, if you look at Bollywood or even regional Indian comedy, for example, one of India's most famous filmmakers, Satyajit Ray, one of my heroes, the late Satyajit Ray, had this series of comedy films which are very, very slapstick, unlike British comedy. So I think Indians love people who can laugh at themselves. But then you asked about Germany, and I can tell you one of the first things that happened when this came out was one of my German colleagues, another robotic surgeon, started asking me about King Arthur and Camelot, where she says King Arthur came a lot, didn't he? And, you know, she's corrected, saying, no, this is Camelot. This is where he lived fictionally. And she looks at this script and says, no, it's written here. Came a lot. So, so the German, you wouldn't think someone in Germany would love that. No. But they did. They asked me about it. So I'm not surprised that what Kunk has done has appealed to so many people in so many different parts of the world.
Do you feel that humor that translates globally is, even as you say, the British style, the self-deprecating humor? There are different shades to it. I think you have things like The Office. And then when you see the American version of The Office, it was a very interesting case because many people, it's one of the few cases, I think, where British people themselves and fans of comedy, perhaps in the early years, kept this to themselves, but then they actually got more comfortable saying, do you know what, I think I prefer the US version of The Office, which was almost taboo. Because the famous thing about the first series of the US Office was what they tried to do was to just basically take the same thing and just do it with a man. And it didn't work. It didn't work whatsoever. It was awful. But obviously second series and then it took off from there. I always find that very, very interesting in terms of, because cultures can be very protective of yes. their assets, so to speak, in terms of culturally.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think each to their own. One of my favorite comedy shows, and I still watch, back versions, Friends and Frasier, when Frasier makes a reappearance recently, where he's older, mad psychiatrist with a mad brother who's also a psychiatrist. I mean, this is very American, but I find it extremely hilarious. And I think both those series, Friends and Frasier, have done very well in the UK, despite comedy-wise being completely different from British humor.
Mm-hmm. And I think there is also that stereotype that, as we discussed earlier, about perhaps, well, Americans won't get it because it's British and it's self-deprecating, which it's a long stereotype that's held. And again, from the statistics alone, proven to be complete nonsense.
Yeah, this is absolutely not true. I quite agree. Comedy has to be across national boundaries, and I think it is. Great comedy is something that people enjoy wherever they are, and it makes them happy.
So in terms of yourself and comedy, you mentioned some of the shows that you grew up with, and I'm thrilled that you mentioned Yes, Minister. And what is bizarre is that almost kind of in a number of interviews that I've done for this podcast, in nearly every case in which I've interviewed an expert and I've asked this question about their early comedy influences, the Goon Show has come up almost every single time. And this is a long shot, but then again, I'm not sure if you are familiar with the Goon Show or not, but I do know, I mean, Spike Milligan, who was one of the, obviously the originators, has a very special connection with India. I'm not sure, did you hear the Goon Show growing up? Or?
I didn't see it wasn't available in India while I was growing up. Unfortunately not, but I suspect I will go back and enjoy it. Again, something to dig out.
It's of its time, very much so. But there have been, I think, milestones in British comedy that have kind of go back to. I mean, you have the Goon Show, and then you have Monty Python, and you have the 40 Towers, and everything that kind of came on from there. I think it's one of, in terms of your experience with British comedy, how does it, in terms of the things that the British are good at or known for, would you say comedy's in the top tier?
Yes, without a doubt. I mean, Fawlty Towers, I mean, I couldn't believe it when I first saw it. I bought the entire DVD takes because I wanted to preserve it so that I could watch it anytime. Now, of course, DVD, chuck it out. I mean, you can see it anytime you wish.
Yeah.
But I mean, how amazing that something that didn't run for very long.
No.
Absolutely astonishingly good, particularly the delivery. It's not just the dialogues, but the delivery, the element of slapstick. The hapless, absolutely rude man and the people around him. I mean, it's just unreal how good it is. And, you know, even now when I watch it, I just can't control my laughter. I mean, you know, keep watching it. It never grows old, does it? I mean, that's how I feel watching Fawlty Towers.
That timeless element. And also, just to go back to what we were talking about, start in terms of surgery and medicine and things like that, there is a... we spoke about it in one of the early episodes about Philomena Kunk, and she's quite a polarizing figure. We've discussed there are a lot of people who find her style of comedy quite abrasive, and it seems like their walls go up very, very quickly because they deem her to be being obtuse and deliberately ignorant and wasting people's time and things like this.
Yeah.
There is an element to which I think people then can't see past their own initial almost revulsion to her style of comedy and perhaps miss how much work and time goes into and how much effort, how much surgical precision almost goes into almost just keeping a straight face, like as he does, the professionalism.
Without question, I can tell you, having done the filming, although I said to them that with me it will be a single take, I learned very early on not to give multiple takes to the press. It's one take, and that is it. But even then, it took a very long time. And, you know, afterwards when I spoke to Diane, she was clearly exhausted. And, you know, what boils down to 5 or 7 minutes is actually many hours of filming. Mm. And even with someone like me who's saying, you have to do it in a single take, otherwise I'm out of here. I have other things to do. But it is tough, both for the expert and for Diane. And there's an entire team that you don't see, you know. It's tough for them, and they select the locations just to make it authentic. But yes, it takes a lot of effort, that writing of the script, the delivery, so on and so forth. So it's quite a day filming for one of those episodes. And mind you, there will be multiple 5 minutes, so you know it's probably I would say it probably took them a whole year to film it and then edit it down to the 1 hour. So it's hard work.
Speaking of that, would you? I don't think anyone is in doubt that this is the last after Kunk on Life. I'm pretty sure there will be more. There will be more shows. There have been some experts, and I think Nigel Spivey was one who took himself out of the running, and from his perspective, perhaps, because, and his is so legendary because he clearly didn't know who she was, and he didn't know what he was walking into. Yeah. So that you get one very specific reaction. His opinion was that you can't really be a returning expert on it because the joke is that they're not supposed to know. And I kind of pushed back a little bit on that, because one thing that is unique to the show, but also it runs throughout it, is that there is an endearing quality to almost how every expert treats Philomena. Yeah. There is a degree of sensitivity. There is an earnestness. There is, I think, and Dr. Irving Finkel pointed out, is because it's in her performance and in her delivery that there is a degree of integrity. Because, yes, as you say, it should be very easy to wipe the floor with her in terms of the silliness of her questions. But that's not the bit. I think the thing that draws people into the show is the gentle quality to which, yes, and the sincere quality to which academics respond to her. And I think I would ask your thoughts on this. But my belief is that where this show probably should have started was that it came out originally, and then any expert who was seen on it would have, or any expert, future potential experts would have seen it and gone, absolutely not, I'm not going on that. I would, yeah, know that, like, ridiculous. But it's the opposite, I think. I think there is a drawing to it because the audience, there is a connection to her, but I think they have a connection with the experts themselves because of that heartfelt way in which they interact with her.
I agree. I think the show is completely genuine, and you can relate to both her and the experts. In fact, there are a number of colleagues from King's from different specialties who have returned. And, you know, I, for one, if I'm asked by the BBC or Netflix to do it again, I would happily join her. I mean, she sort of keeps it dangling in the air, so to say, about space and so on. So it is possible, I mean, that she may return and do something in space. That is possible. She, of course, has morphed into Mandy, as you know. And
yes.
So these are the short takes that are appearing on YouTube. And, you know, a completely different side to her. You know, Mandy goes and takes a driving test and almost kills the driving instructor. And the driving instructor, out of frustration, signs her off because she does not want to take another driving test with Mandy. So these things have happened. What can I say? But well, if Kunk asks me to return, then, or I'm asked to return by the BBC, then I will. I think I enjoyed it. And, you know, I can tell you this. I was recently in Strasbourg for an international meeting of robotic surgeons. And one of my colleagues, American, during the evening dinner, comes and says, "Broca, I want you to meet someone. This is absolutely essential." And this is his 20-year-old daughter who, could not believe that the expert, yours truly, was a friend of her father's, and, you know, wanted to have a photograph taken with me, which subsequently got posted all over social media. But, you know, so there are people who can relate to this, and, you know, I would certainly be up for it if asked again.
Well, I genuinely hope you do. I would love to see you again. And I think there, as you said, there are so many experts on who appear in the show, but there are only perhaps a handful who really stick in people's minds. And I 100% when you appeared on Quick, I think it was your initial response to the 40% of people have skeletons. And where did you get this number from? I think from that moment on, you endeared yourselves to millions of people around the world.
The comparison with Laurence Olivier, I think, went a bit too far. I interacted with the journalist on, X, and she thought she was being genuine. I thought she went a bit too far, but such is life. I mean, I kept a straight face. I really couldn't believe it. I said to her, "What on earth are you talking about? I mean, where did you get this figure from?"
I think a lot of people think, and I've had this conversation with people, I believe the same, perhaps, as the Guardian journalist. I think there is a degree of, I think acting is the wrong word, but I believe, and maybe it's because of the type of people that she is talking to, academics, perhaps you have a more pronounced ability to maybe snap down into a certain mode. Is that the right kind of?
Absolutely.
You can filter things out and give a direct, straight answer.
Correct. Particularly if you're a surgeon, the answer is like a knife. It's incisive and direct. And there are no acting skills involved. I never went to acting school. She asked me a question which I couldn't really believe she was asking me. So I told her exactly what I felt with a straight face. I didn't think it was funny. Did you?
Well, I one thing I do wonder is how many people then went out to look to see if Burt Reynolds genuinely was made of 100% of meat.
They need to find a life, I think.
The Google searches. I guarantee you more than one person just went and quickly Googled that. Professor Dasgupta, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure. Have a lovely rest of your day. I really hope that we see you again, either on something else, but specifically, yes, I would love to see you and Philomena Kunk interact again. So thank you.
Mike, thank you. Been a pleasure. And let's have some fun.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Kunked, part of the Scheist Podcast Network. Kunked was created and hosted by Nick Scheist and Skadoosh, and is recorded, edited, and produced at Scheist Podcast Studios. Our associate producer is Jake Crawford. Our theme music is written and performed by Mike Willoughby.
I mean, it would have been nice to have had some offers from Hollywood or Bollywood, but the next best thing is an offer to join this podcast. I mean, what can I say? It must be a good thing.